This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We discussed the three cultures, the culture that worships perfection in the object, technological perfection, and the culture that worships perfection in the model, religious perfection, Torah, the Bible, Quran, whatever, each one has its own perfection of a model, and the culture that worships perfection in relationships. And we related those three cultures back to the three sons of Noach, to Shem, that is definition, the model, to Yefes, that is the object, beauty, aesthetics, perfection, and Chom, that is warm, intimate relationships. We discussed the interplay between these three cultures and how they can be woven together in a Noachide system. What Noach had to achieve in the Teva was all these three cultures interreacting in a complementary way, in a way that puts them together. And we discussed in the South African scene as well how there are these three cultures, how these three cultures do interplay right here in South Africa as they do in the United States, and the different ways that America has chosen to handle it and how South Africa needs to choose to handle it, that we discussed last week. What I want to explore this week is, over and above those three cultures, there is surely a fourth culture, which is our own. We're not merely part of the Semitic culture. We're not simply part of B'nai Shem. In addition to being part of B'nai Shem are those that worship the model, that find perfection in the model. And that's fine, we understand that. And we also see perfection in the Torah. But surely we are not exactly the same as the Arabs. Surely we are not exactly the same as other Semitic races. Surely there is something specific about the Jewish culture and the way it interrelates with the other cultures, which is different to the three interrelationships that we discussed last week. And that revolves around the role of nationalism in the cultures. There are three ways that the various cultures look at their nations, at their countries, at their lands. You have a nation that will look at its land in terms of its objective qualities, its beauty. So the Swiss, they love Switzerland. Why do they love Switzerland? Because it's beautiful. You couldn't take the Swiss and put them somewhere else and achieve the same sense of national identity. That wouldn't be possible. The only thing that you can, what the Swiss worship, what the Swiss appreciate about their country is its beauty. It's an objective thing. And you find other countries that have also certain qualities about their country, certain objective scientific qualities about their country, the climate. The Australians love the climate. Each one has a particular aspect about their own country, an objective aspect that they feel attached to. It's one kind of culture. The other kind of culture is a culture that worships its country. Germany, Japan, fatherland, motherland, whatever you want to call it, the country takes on a deity. It's much more than a place, than an object with beautiful mountains and lakes in it. It's more than that. The Swiss don't believe in Switzerland. They don't worship Switzerland. The Swiss appreciate it. They appreciate the aesthetics. But the Germans worship Germany, and the Japanese worship Japan. It's actually a deity. So they are there you see that worshipping of the model. And then you find some people who worship, who appreciate in the country, nothing to do with the land. They don't feel attached to the land, not in an objective sense, not in a spiritual sense. They're attached to the people, to the society. That's what they feel close to. And these three cultures and the way they relate to their lands also have an important effect in the question of movement, of migration, of emigration. A nation that is attached not to the land, but to the people, to the society of the land, can move comfortably provided the society moves with them, like the Bushmen or the Bedouins. They can move from place to place and they retain that contact with the land. They retain that national contact not with a land but with a nation, even though that nation is not attached to any kind of physical point. And those that see their country as a deity, they can also travel around quite comfortably, and wherever they are, they remain Germans or they remain Japanese. It makes no difference whether they're in Japan or they're not. They never fully integrate. You will never find a Japanese becoming a fully integrated member of another nation, of another society. That doesn't happen. You will never find a German fully integrating and becoming a member of another society. He retains his loyalty always to his nation, because his nation is a deity. It's a religious affiliation. And irrespective of how long he's been in another country, there's an almost religious affiliation with his country which remains no matter what. And the Americans aren't much different. And then you've got the people who are attached to the object of their land, and they find it difficult to travel anywhere. They find a need to remain attached physically to their country, to their land. They feel uncomfortable when they're away from their land. They feel alienated when they're away from their land. Those are the three types of nationalism that we find. And Avraham is told at the beginning of the Sedra to distance himself from all those three types of nationalism. Lech lecho, says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Avraham. Me'artzecho, from that place which the people around you see as their eretz, the land, the physical manifestation of the land, the agriculture and the aesthetics of the land. U'mimoyladetecho, and those people who feel attached to their land because it's a moyledes, it's a birthplace. This is where I come from, this is where my grandparents come from, this is where my great-grandparents come from. It's almost, me'ladetecho means the land that bore you. It has an almost parental relationship, a fatherland, a motherland, as people call it. That concept of moiledes. Modern Israelis talk about that when it comes to Israel as a moiledes, as a birthplace, a place that gave birth to one. Those of you, or those people around you who see their land as a deity, as a parental figure, distance yourself from them as well. And from those who see their land merely as a place where the family lives, as a place where the relatives live, where the tribe lives, distance yourself away from that. You're going to develop an entirely new relationship with a country, with nationalism, which no nation until now has ever had, and no nation ever will have. And in Parshas Lech Lecho we see the beginnings, the germination of the formation of the Jewish relationship with Eretz Yisrael. And the first thing is, Lech Lecho, Me'artzecho, Me'umeladetecho, Me'beisovicho. Those three relationships with land, which tie in with those three different types of culture, although it's not the same cultures that have the same relationships. The Germans, we said last week, have a technological culture, but their relationship with their country is a deity relationship. And so on. It doesn't necessarily tie up exactly. The three cultures aren't necessarily shared in both instances, but it's the same kind of three approaches. And those three approaches that we discussed last week, the approach of Cham and the approach of Shem and the approach of Yefes, each manifests itself in a certain type of nationalism, all of which you have to distance yourself from. They're all foreign to you. And where are you going to go? Where will you find the right place? In a land which I will show you. Where? Well, doesn't matter. What land? What country? Asher Areko. Why is the Ribbono Shel Olam so vague? That's one question. Why doesn't he say where he's going to take him? What's the name of the land? And secondly, what's the reason? Why must he go? Now, I started learning a medrash with you last night. We only did half the medrash. The medrash Tanchum in the beginning of the Sedra, where the medrash says, let's just go through the first part again. Yelamdeinu Rabbeinu Odom Yisrael Maushi Yekabel Olov Malchus Shomayim Kshum Halich. What is the din? Is a person allowed to be Mekabel Olov O Malchus Shomayim, to accept upon himself the yoke of heaven while he's walking around? Can a person say the first sentence of Kriya Shema, Shema Yisrael Hashem Rekinu Hashem Echad, which is our declaration of the acceptance of God's kingdom? Can we do that while we're wandering around? Or do you have to stand in one place? And I explained last night that we take it as a simple sort of question, but if we were from any other religion, imagine what they would think if a Catholic priest saw this, or any other religion saw this. What kind of question is this? Who would think that you can be in a Kabbalah or Malchus Shem Shemayim while you're wandering around? Imagine going in a cathedral, wandering around while they're saying Kriya Shema. Imagine, they all sit quietly in their places, nobody utters a word, nobody moves. It's how it is, wandering around. But for us, it's a little bit more familiar. We see people wandering around in shul, so it's not such a strange question. But we need to understand it. So the Medrash goes on to say, also the Kabbalah of Malch Shalom Shul Mahalach, you're not allowed to do so. Ela yamud b'mokom echod, you must stay in one place. V'yechavin libo l'shamayim, and you must apply your heart to heaven. Be'emo uve'yiro bereses uve'zeo be'yichud Hashem. And you must apply your mind to heaven with fear and with awe, with trembling and with oneness of intent, being miyached the Ribbono Shel Olam v'yikro Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Uchashemaschil v'ahavto, but once you start the rest of the Shema v'ahavto es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol moedecha, b'chol moedecha, rotzo mahalech, rotzo imed, rotzo yoshev, whatever you want. You can walk, you can stand, you can sit, however you want to be, which is also strange. So now we feel a bit relieved. At least that first sentence of the Shema, we understand you have to be standing at one point when you say Shema Yisrael. But that means once you've said that, you're allowed to be walking around the shul. What kind of business is that? Says the Medrash, Shekach Ksiv, because it actually says so in the Shema itself. Beshiv techo beveisecho, uvelech techo vaderech, uveshoch techo vekumecho. It says in the Shema that you've got to read the Shema, you've got to learn Torah when you sit in your house, and when you go by the way, and when you lie down, and when you get up. So you see, there's no special time or place for Torah. Torah is at all times, in all places. Wherever you are, you should be learning the Shema, you should be thinking in Torah, you should be learning Torah. There's no special time or place for it. We make special times and places, and that's part of it. There is an inyan of being koveya, eating the Torah, of setting aside time for Torah, but that is not to exclude other times. What we're saying is those times are exclusively Torah, but there is no time that is exclusively something else. That's the difference. There are times which are exclusively Torah. That's Kriya Sittim LaTorah. We come to a shir at a particular time. That's, we exclude everything else but Torah. But that doesn't mean that the other times are exclusively something else. We're exclusively at work. We're exclusively walking. We're exclusively eating. At all times that we're doing anything else, we're thinking Torah. Because even on the lowest level, we're at least thinking how we do it. How we to do it. What is the correct way to do it? How does Hashem want us to function? What's right? What's wrong? So we're constantly making value decisions every moment of our lives. Value decisions is learning Torah. How can you make a value decision without learning Torah? So on its lowest level, functioning in life, we're learning Torah. And that's the meaning of Torah. B'shiv t'chol b'v'esecho, v'lech b'chol v'derech, v'shoch b'chol v'kumecho. Torah has to be thought and practiced and reasoned and worked out in all the situations in which we find ourselves. There is no time, there is no place for Torah. Torah is a dynamic of life, and it applies in all aspects of life all the time. But Kriya Shema is different. That first sentence of Kriya Shema, that's something else. That's called Avodah. And we have two aspects to our Torah. There's Torah and there's Avodah. And Avodah doesn't mean like B'nai Akiva says, Torah v'Avodah, to go and work in the land of Israel. That's not what Avodah means. That's Avodah. And Avodah is what you do, you do in a coal mine, or what you do in Siberia. That's Avodah. There's no big mitzvah to go and work the land in Israel and work the sweat while you're picking apples. There's no big mitzvah in that. You can get Arabs to do that. There's no reason why a Jew should be Mevatel Torah to go and pick apples and make a big ideal out of it. Picking apples in Israel, big deal. Much bigger mitzvah to sit and learn Torah in Chutz La'aretz than to pick apples in Israel. And so one of these crazy phrases that people get carried away with, one of these slogans that people get carried away with without thinking. Much bigger mitzvah to learn Torah in Chutz La'aretz than to pick apples in Eretz Yisrael. And to learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael is still a bigger mitzvah. When we talk about Torah v'Avodah, we're talking about saying the first sentence of Kriya Shema. When we talk about Torah v'Avodah, we're talking about davening Shema Esrei. We're talking about the Beis HaMikdosh. That's Avodah. And when we say that the Yiddishkeit stands on these two foundations, on Torah v'Avodah, that's what we mean. Torah, which is a part of our day-to-day life. Torah, which is expressed in every breath we take. Torah, which is expressed in every step that we take, in every aspect and every dimension of our lives, is Torah. And Avodah, which has a special time and place. For Avodah, we have to stop what we're doing. For Avodah, we've got to stop and remove ourselves from the norms of life and place ourselves in a cocoon of Kedusha. And in that cocoon of Kedusha, we perform our Avodah, we perform our service. That's different to Torah. Torah is God communicating to man, in a sense. Avodah is man communicating to God. When God's communicating to man, that's constant, all the time. It's coming. These radio waves are hitting us all the time. It's just a question of how we tune in. You don't have to be in a special place. You can have your little radio with you wherever you are. And you tune in, the radio waves are there. Hashem is communicating non-stop. Avodah, when we have to communicate with Hashem, We've got to be in the right place, we have to find a transmitter, we've got to be in the right position, in the right place, the right conditions have to exist, otherwise the communication isn't carried across properly. That's avodah. Avodah has a time and place and can be performed only at that time and only in that place. Torah has no time and no place. It can and must be learnt and studied and reasoned at all times in all places. That's the difference. And Kriya Shema, that first paragraph of Kriya Shema, is divided into two sections. The first sentence, and Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Eloheinu Voed, constitutes an expression of Avodah. The second part, from the Ahavta onwards, constitutes an expression of Torah. And therefore the first part we have to be stationary for, we have to have a fixed place for, and the second part we can wander around, we can move around with. But then the Midrash goes on, the second part, and says, Ata Moitse, you find, Kol HaMedakdek Al HaMitzvos Schorei Merubo. Seems to be completely disconnected. Anybody who is meticulous in the mitzvahs has great reward. Shekein matzinu ba'avrohom shedikdei kala mitzvahs, because we find this with Avrohom, who was meticulous with mitzvahs. Lefichach nikro oyavo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why he's called the beloved one of Hashem. Omer Rav Shmuel ba Nachmeni, Omer Rabbi Yonason, afilu eruvei tavshilin shoma beveshit shel Avrohom Avinu. Even a meticulous detail of halacha that we think was developed much later on wasn't. Eruv Tavshilin. That if Yom Tov falls on the day, if Shabbos falls on the day after Yom Tov, that you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov to prepare for Shabbos, although you're preparing for the next day, which normally you're not allowed to do. We have a mechanism called Eruv Tavshilin, where you start the cooking process already before Yom Tov, and you merely continue it on Yom Tov, and that we're allowed to do. That's a complex halachic principle that develops in the Gemara. And that also Avram kept meticulously, the same Erev Tavshilin that we still do today, Avram Avinu used to do in his home. And the Medrash proves it from the Psukim. Omer le HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said to Avram, Ato medakdek b'mitzvosai v'ato yoshev imovdek echovim. You're so meticulous about my mitzvahs, and you sit among these avodah zorah, among these idolaters. Tzei mi b'nehem, lech lecho me'atzecho, get out from here. Go from the That's where the Medrash Tanchuma gives us some kind of reasoning. What prompted Hashem to say this? What prompted Hashem to say, emigrate? Says the Medrash, when the Ribbono Shel Olam saw how meticulously Avram cared for every detail of the mitzvahs, he said, this is not a place for you. Go, get not among these idolaters, go. So where does he land up sending him? To Eretz Canaan, the most degenerate of all places in the entire world, where the Canaanites were, the Bnei Chom, Canaan and the Chivi and the Yevusi and the Girgoshi, all these terrible people who had to ultimately be destroyed and wiped out. What's the big thing? He's going from the pot into the frying pan, out of Choron and Ur-Kastim and these places, and where to Canaan? What's the big deal? There are a few things, and I'm just going to touch on them. The one is to notice through the Sedra the contrast between movement and station, and being stationary. Between movement and station. Set the start, lech lecho, move, go. To where? Hashem doesn't tell him where. Start traveling. That's all Hashem tells him. It's like the second part of Kriya Shema. You can say Kriya Shema while you're walking. You don't have to be in one particular place. You don't have to have a place. So he starts the Sedra with his first mission to Avram is lech lecho. Move out of your place. Don't regard this as your fixed place. Remembering and bearing in mind that Avodah, service, relates to a fixed place. Torah relates to movement, dynamics. Ribbono Shel Olam says to Avram, lech lecho, start movement, get dynamic, get moving, get going. That's not going to affect your Torah, and I don't want you staying in this one place. And what must you leave? All these three aspects of nationalism. Where must you go? El Horet Asher Arek, to the land which I show you. Now later on, when after Avram gets to Eretz Israel, you'll remember, he just gets there, he's hardly settled down there, and Vayehi Rav Ba'aretz, there's a famine in the land, Vayered Avram Mitzrayim Alogu Shom, and Avram goes down to Mitzrayim to dwell there. Just arrived in Israel, and he's already off to Mitzrayim. And the Ramban has a very strong complaint about Avram, and says, V'daki Avram Avinu Choto Chet Godol Bishigogo. Avram Avinu committed a terrible sin by mistake. First one was that he got his wife into such danger, and also he says gam yitziyosu min ha'oretz, leaving Eretz Yisrael was wrong. Just because of the famine, is that a reason to leave Eretz Yisrael? Says the Ramban. He says it was a mistake, but it was wrong. Not everybody agrees with that, but that's what the Ramban says. What prompted Avraham, after he'd just been told by Hashem to travel all that way from Choron to Eretz Israel? He arrives in Eretz Israel and Hashem says to him, oh, this is the place I'm going to give to your children. And 2 minutes later he's packing his bags because he can't make a living and he's going to Mitzrayim. Hashem didn't tell him to go. Where does he get it from? How did he work out that he had to go to Mitzrayim? On what basis did he make that move? The answer is, Hashem said to him, didn't say, I'm going to take you to Eretz Canaan. Hashem said, travel. That's what Hashem said. Lech lecha. Where to? To where I tell you to be. And if where you are, there's a famine, that's a sign you must move somewhere else. So that Avraham regarded himself at all times in the place, Asher Areko, that's the place which Hashem has shown me to be. Wherever Hashem shows me to be, that's the place. He is defining the place, he's defining his own place, not in terms of geographical boundaries, but in terms of directives from the Ribbono Shel Olam. If this is where Hashem has directed me to be, then this is my country. And it makes no difference where it is. And if tomorrow Hashem directs me to be somewhere else, that is my country, that's all. And he goes to Mitzrayim lo gushom. He knows that it's also a temporary thing. He's there only as long as there's famine. Because he knows as long when the famine's over, it is Hashem's will that he should return to Eretz Yisrael. But he doesn't regard himself as disobeying the injunction of go to the land Asher Arecho. Because he regards moving to Mitzrayim in the time of famine as an indication from Hashem that now at this particular time, Mitzrayim is where Hashem wants him to be. This is still the land Asher Arecho. But let's watch what develops. He goes, Hashem says, go to the land which I'll show you. How did he know which way to go? So now he's going to start the travel. Where? Okay, I'll show you where. But I've got to make a decision now. Do I go east? Do I go west? Do I go north? Do I go south? What direction? What road am I going to take? On what basis did Avraham decide to take the western road instead of the eastern road? Or instead of the northern or the southerly road? On what basis did he make that decision? That we can understand also, because we see further on that there's a very interesting confrontation between Avraham and Malki Tzedek, you'll remember. After the war with the kings, Umalki Tzedek Melech Sholem Hoitzi Lechem V'Yayin V'Hu Choyim L'Kel Elyon. And Malki Tzedek, the king of Sholem, brought out bread and wine, and he was a Kohen, he was a priest to Hashem. Says Rashi, Umalki Tzedek, who's Shem ben Noach? That's Shem. So when Avraham had to decide, where am I going to go? He went to where his Zayda was. His Zayda from 9 generations back. Shem is still alive. Shem ben Noach is still alive. And he's living in Yerushalayim. So if it's a choice of where to go, he goes back to his roots. He goes back to his origins. He goes back to his Mesuris. If there has to be a move, if there has to be a decision to make a move, he chooses Eretz Yisrael, he chooses Canaan, not because Hashem has told him to go there, but because he works out of all the options, that's the most logical place to go to. That's where Malki Tzedek is. It's true that the Canaanites are there, and the Chivi, and the Yevusi, and all these disgusting people, but Malki Tzedek is also there. He's a Tzaddik, and he's Shem, and he's his old Zayden, and he's got the whole Mesiris from Noach, and he can go and learn with him as well. It's a wonderful opportunity. So as far as Avraham is concerned, the instruction to move, if now I've got to choose, the main instruction is move, just go, it doesn't matter where you're going. It's the only time I've actually experienced that properly, that feeling of moving and not knowing or caring where you're going, was on one occasion when I was in Italy, and I was feeling terribly ill. I had flu, and I was at the airport trying to get out of Italy. In Milan I was, in fact, and there was one of these wildcat strikes, I think they used to call them, where you didn't know until you got onto the plane, until the plane took off, whether your plane would take off or not. They just decided every now and then another plane wouldn't take off. And people had spent the whole day there already waiting, hoping. So everything goes all right, and you queue up, and you stand, and you wait. This was in the days when Italy was in a mess. And I just got to the point where I was about to check in, and I saw what was going on and what was happening. So I ran for the airport entrance, and I just said to them, take me to the railway station. I said to a taxi, get me to the railway station fast, before anybody else gets onto the idea. And I got to the railway station, I went to the ticket office, I said, get me onto a train. He said, where do you want to go? I said, doesn't matter, anywhere, out of Italy, just out of Italy. And he said, yeah, I understand, but where? What country? What town? I said, it really doesn't matter. Just the first train that gets out of this country, that's where I want to go. And he looked and shook his head and said, platform such and such, at the train is going to Switzerland. That feeling of, it doesn't matter where you're going, well, all you know is one thing, here is no good, you've got to get out of here. And that's all that Hashem said to Avraham. Where are you going? I'll show you, so it doesn't matter where you're going. Get out of here. Yes, but I've got to take a decision. Do I go left? Do I go right? Do I go north? Do I go south? East? West? Malki Tzedek's in Yerushalayim, Shem is sitting in Yerushalayim, that's a logical direction to take. That's where I'll go. So he starts moving towards Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't know if Hashem's going to let him go all the way, or if Hashem's going to stop him halfway and say, this is where I want you to be, or Hashem will make him go beyond Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't know where he's going to go. All he knows is that in choosing a direction, that's the direction, that's the most logical direction to take. And he's now in a state of motion. Motion means he's moved from a state of being stationary into a state of being of in motion. That's very important. Why is that so important? Because the dikduke mitzvahs that the Medrash talked about, the meticulousness of halachic observance, which prompted Hashem to say, Lech Lecha, go. That meticulous observance is a function of avodah. That's not Torah. Torah is the learning of Torah. The meticulous observance of halacha is a kind of avodah. For avodah, you need to be stationary. Hashem says, but this isn't the place. If you're going to regard your stationary situation as relating to your avodah, this isn't the place. You get moving. And so he moves. Vayelech Avram kasher dibeh elav Hashem, vayelech ito loit. And Avram went as Hashem had instructed him, and he took loit. He was 75 years old when he left Choron, and he took Sora his wife, and Lot his nephew, and all their property, and the people that they had gathered around them. And as a community, they all left, going in the direction of Eretz Canaan, which Hashem, again, hadn't told them to do. They chose to go in the direction of Eretz Canaan. Vayavoyu Eretz Canaan, and they came to Eretz Canaan. Vayavoyr Avram Boretz ad Mekim Shechem ad Eloi Mere. And Avram passed, he's still in a state of traveling. He now comes to Eretz Canaan, but he's moving. Until he comes to Shechem, until he eventually comes to Eloi Mere. Vahaknani Oz Boretz, the Torah tells us. The Knani were then there, implying that wasn't their natural place. Hashem didn't intend Bnei Chom to possess the land of Eretz Israel. But Haknani, as well, they had got there, that's where they were. At that point, Vayero Hashem el Avram, Hashem appears to Avram and he says, Lezaracho ete nesoretz hazois, I will give this land to your children. Stationary. This is a place to stop. What does he do? First thing, now it's a place, a mokum kavua, a place I can stop. Vayiven sham mizbeach laHashem ani ro elav, he builds an altar and he brings a sacrifice. That's avoida. All the time he was traveling, there's no avoida. When he gets to a place, he can stop. At that point, there's avoid. Service. Then he moves again. Ve'yatek mishom ha'hori. He moves towards the mountain. Mikedem leveisel. And he moves towards Beisel. Vayet oholo. And there he pitches his tent. Once again, stationary. He stops there. Beisel miyom v'ho'ay mikedem. Beisel was on the west, and I was on the east, and Avram was just between Beisel and I. So he's now stopped again. What does he do? Vayiven shom mizbeach la'ashem. He builds an altar. Not while he's traveling. For that he has to stop. Vayisa Avram haloich v'nosoya hanegbo. And Avram carried on his travels. In Eretz Yisrael, he carried on traveling. Going up and down in the Negev. Traveling around, looking around, moving around. He was in a state of flux. Then there was the famine. Then he goes off to Mitzrayim. Then he comes back from Mitzrayim. A wealthy man. Vayal Avram mimitzrayim hu v'ishto v'chol ha-shaloi v'leit imo hanegbo. And Avram and his wife and Lot with him all come up through the Negev. Vayelech lamasov, and he carried on his travels. There's a constant emphasis right through the Sedra on Avram's movement. He's moving all the time. Min Negev ad Beisel, from the south until Beisel. Ad amokom asher hayoshem oylu b'tchilo bein Esel uveno, until the place where he was before. That's where he comes to. El mekoyim hamizbeach asher also shom barishoyno, back to the original place where he built the mizbeach. Vayikro Shom Avram b'shem Hashem, and Avram served Hashem there as well. Back to the original place. That's a mokum kavua. That is a place. What is special about that place? The Medrash says, Medrash Rabbo says on Malki Tzedek, what does that name mean, Malki Tzedek? Malki Tzedek really means the king of Tzedek. But then it says Melech Sholem, the king of Sholem. So was he the king of Tzedek or was he the king of Sholem? And the Medrash learns that he was the king of a place called Sholem, which was Yerushalayim, of a people called Tzedek, because it was a mokum shematzdik es Yeshuv. It's a place that makes tzaddikim out of those who dwell there. That's an amazing thing to say about a place. How can a place make tzaddikim? What other country, what other city, what other place have you got a place that makes tzaddikim out of those that dwell there? We need to understand what Eretz Yisrael is and how we relate to it. But perhaps we do, before we do that, let's look at the impact of that interaction between Avrom and Shem for the first time. Here comes Shem, who has a long tradition of belief in Hashem, and here comes Avrom from a distant land who's discovered Hashem all for himself. And for the first time they meet, Shem has obviously heard about Avrom, and Avrom has heard about Shem, and for the first time they meet. Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem, after the war with the kings, where Avrom becomes very involved, and he takes them on with a small band of men, and he conquers the aggressive kings. Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem Hutzi Lechem V'Yoyim. Malki Tzedek wasn't involved. He wasn't involved with the four kings. He wasn't involved with the five kings. He wasn't involved in the battle. He was sitting quietly in his yeshiva and learning. When Avrom comes, he comes out with wine and bread, makes suda. V'hu Chohen. He was a Kohen. What's his function? Avodah. His function is service. Has Malki Tzedek ever traveled? No. Has Malki Tzedek had impact on the world? No. Malki Tzedek's a Kohen. A Kohen stays in the Beis HaMikdash. A Kohen stays in Yerushalayim. A Kohen doesn't go traveling. That's the Kohen's role. His role is Avodah. And Avodah, you remember, is always tied to a fixed place. Torah is a function of movement, of dynamics. Avodah is a function of stability, and Malki Tzedek is a kohen. And he blesses Avrom and he says, Boruch Avrom lekel elyon, blessed be Avrom to the Most High God. Twice it's called here the Most High God, implying that there was almost an acceptance of other gods. And then he adds, Kenei Shomayim Ve'oretz, that Hashem who has acquired heaven and earth. Through who? Through Avrom Avinu. So Malki Tzedek recognizes in Avraham Avinu a dimension in a mission from the Ribbono Shel Olam different to his own. Malki Tzedek's is one of preservation. Avraham Avinu's is one of transmission, is one of communication. Malki Tzedek is meant to stay in Yerushalayim and to preserve the tradition. Avraham's mission was travel, lech lecha, get out, go there, move, get around in the world and communicate that which you've got. And when Malki Tzedek sees that, he says, in Avraham Avinu we see a Ribbono Shel Olam who's no longer the most high God of all the gods, he's the highest one. Here we see Kohen Shemayim Voritz. We see a Ribbono Shel Olam capable of commanding the respect of the entire world. That's what he sees in Avraham Avinu, and that's how he expresses himself. Let's try and understand where it all goes to and what it's all about. Torah is something dynamic. Torah is something which isn't tied to a time, it isn't tied to a place. One can move around with it. Torah was given in the desert. Why was Torah given in the desert? So that no nation should be able to say this applies here more than there. If Torah applies in Eretz Yisrael, or Torah applies in Chutz Lo'aretz. Torah was given in a desert. Torah is unconnected in any way to a country, to a nation. Torah was given, we accepted the Torah in the desert to show that it is totally independent of any time and of any place. It transcends time and place. Avodah, not so. There's only one place for Avodah. That's in Eretz Yisrael. And there are specific times, and in Eretz Yisrael, only Yerushalayim. And in Yerushalayim, only in the Beis HaMikdash. A very specific place where Avodah can take place. And only at a certain time, only provided the Beis HaMikdash is functioning, and only at certain times of the day and certain times of the year, we are governed with meticulous and rigorous requirements in the way we handle our avodah. Special time and a special place. So, avodah, we have to stand in one place. You say the first sentence of Shema Yisrael, that's avodah. Shmona Esra, that's avodah. You stand with your feet together, be'emo, be'resis, be'zeo, and you have your mind fixed on the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that's it. There has to be total involvement with the Ribbono Shel Olam. There has to be an absolute exclusion of anything else from one's mind and from one's physical environment other than the Ribbono Shel Olam. Not so when it comes to Torah. When it comes to Torah, we're actually relating it to the world. We're actually involved in other things, and it's the relationship with those other things that makes us think Torah, and we're thinking Torah while we're relating to the things around and about us.
And therefore, when it comes to the rest of the Shema, we can walk around. When Avraham Avinu shows his meticulousness in Avodah, the Ribbono Shlom is afraid, he now needs a place of Avodah. What is the tendency? The tendency is that Avraham would say, good, this is where I am, this is my place of Avodah. That the Ribbono Shlom doesn't want. If you're becoming attached to Avodah, which Avraham had not been instructed to do, this he did through his own Ruach HaKodesh, he grasped these things himself, the Torah had not yet been given. Avraham worked all this out. But if you work this Avodah out, that you're now involved not only in Torah, not only in Gemilus Chasodim, but you're involved in Avodah as well, in the meticulous details of Halacha, for that you've got to be in Eretz Yisrael. And there's an interesting shita of the Ramban, there are not many people who hold this way, but the Ramban says it several times, and that is that the only place where you really have to keep the mitzvahs is in Eretz Yisrael. That doesn't mean don't heave a sigh of relief and think that it's not like that at all. Well, firstly, we don't pass in that way, and secondly, even the Ramban says, but in Chutzlos you do, and the reason you have to keep the mitzvahs in Chutzlos is to stay in practice, because it's very hard to get into a routine of keeping mitzvahs that you haven't been used to keeping. When Israelis come to South Africa, even very frum Israelis, they sometimes find it very difficult to get used to not carrying on Shabbos. Not just that they forget about it, they find it difficult to regard it as important, because they never saw their parents worrying about it, they never saw their grandparents worrying about it, because there's an Erev all over the place there. And it's very hard to become meticulous about something that you never saw your parents and grandparents being meticulous about. And the other way around too, when we go to Israel, it's hard for us to become meticulous about Shemitah and about Trumas and Maaseres. We never saw it as part of a way of life here, so when we come there, although we know we've got it, we don't attach the same kind of importance as we do to the things we're used to. You see from that how hard it is to suddenly start keeping when you've changed environment. And so says the Ramban, we're commanded to continue keeping all the mitzvahs and chutzlot so that when we come to Israel we are well practiced. There's nothing, we don't find it in any way foreign or alien. But really the place for keeping the mitzvahs is only Israel. That's how the Ramban learns. And so Hashem says, that fits in very nicely with this Medrash Tanchuma. And so Hashem says to Avraham Avinu, if you want Avodah, you need a place, you need a mokum for Avodah. If you're just involved in Torah, if you're involved in intellect and in thought and in reason, and you want to teach that, you can wander around. But if you want Avodah, there's got to be a place, you've got to be stationary. So then you've got to go. So why does he make him travel so much? Why doesn't he just tell him, so go to Eretz Canaan, and there you'll find Yerushalayim, and sit in Yerushalayim, and that's the place of Avodah, finished. Because Avodah is not the only thing in Torah, there's Torah as well. And so we see two foundations beginning to be built, Torah and Avodah. The Jew needs to travel, and by traveling I don't mean it literally only, it has a literal aspect to it itself, but it means he needs to have an awareness of the world, he needs to be communicative. That's what we mean by lech lecho, go, move, meet people, talk to people, interact with people, travel, and communicate the ideas you're thinking. That's Torah. Avodah, there's no need to communicate. We don't teach the goyim how to bring korbanos. We don't teach kodshim to the goyim. It's not their business, and Avraham was not his mission to go and teach kodshim to the goyim. To eruv tavshilim to the goyim, that wasn't his mission. To go and teach the details of Hilchos Shabbos to the goyim, that wasn't his mission. And that's why Hashem says, if you're meticulous in the details of halacha that you want to observe as a service, that's an intimate thing between you and me. And intimacy is practiced at home. Intimacy is not practiced in the streets. There's a place for intimacy. There's a time for intimacy. Intimacy needs a certain atmosphere. Intimacy needs privacy. Intimacy needs a home. And this isn't my home, says the Ribbono Shel Avraham. Here in Haran, that's not my home. For intimacy, you've got to go. But there are two things. There you need to be traveling as an end in itself, and you need to have a home. You can travel if you have a home. There's a big difference between a person who travels, who has a home, and he travels, and a person who doesn't have a home and he travels. One's called a Bedouin or a gypsy, and the other's called a tourist. Different thing. A tourist has a home, and he travels and he comes back to his home. A gypsy doesn't have a home. A Bedouin doesn't have a home. He just wanders around. He's only in a state of wandering. The Jew has both. The Jew has a home and he travels. The only nation. No other nation has ever done that before. All other nations either are wanderers and they don't have a state of their own, or they have a state and they stay put. The Swiss stay in Switzerland, except for a few yechidim. We'll go here, we'll go there. But basically the Swiss stay in Switzerland, and the Swedes stay in Sweden, and the Germans stay in Germany, and the Japanese stay in Japan, and they've been there all the time. They don't go moving around. But not so with the Jews. We've occupied places all over the world. There's hardly a city in the world where we haven't had communities. And we've moved in large communities and small communities. The whole nation has moved. The whole of Klal Yisrael has lived in different parts. We've been in Babylon. We've been in Spain. We've been in Northern Europe. We've been in North Africa. In large numbers, we've established communities there. We've established systems. We've established governments there. Systems of government as recently as before the war. In Eastern Europe, we had our own system of civic governments in the towns that we lived in. We wasn't just wandering around. And yet we've got Eretz Yisrael. This dual relationship of having a place and visiting at the same time, having a place and traveling, having avodah and having Torah, having a communicative mission but also having a place to come back to, which is our own home, that's the style of the Jewish people. Different altogether from any of the other nations. And avodah is the expression of technological perfection. What is avodah? In avodah we express perfection in the object. The luluf has to be perfect. The esrog has to be perfect. The sukkah has to be al pi halacha. The tefillin have to be written perfectly. The sefer Torah, there mustn't be a tiniest scratch. We are more obsessive about the perfection of our objects of worship than the biggest hi-fi or computer fanatic is about his equipment. We're much more fanatical about that. It's true that the computer guy, when there's a new model comes out, he wants to get the new model, but it doesn't entirely puffle the old one. He'll let his children play with the old one. He doesn't throw it out immediately. It takes a few months or a few years before he throws it out. It doesn't become posel. But with us, what happens? One little scratch in a letter on the sefer Torah, posel! Put away, no use, finished. Absolutely posel. Absolutely, the whole Torah is posel because one little letter had a scratch. Yes, whole Torah posel. How does business? Tilling. Find one little scratch and one little letter, put them into shame, it's finished. It's good, and you finish tilling. One little scratch. We're much more obsessive about our objects than the most obsessive people are about their objects. The only difference is that's not our whole religion. It's not only that, that's avodah. Avodah has to be there's a perfection. When it comes to korbanos, when it comes to bringing sacrifices, the perfection of the animals that we bring and how we bring it and the steps and that every action has to be done exactly right, we can become absolutely crazy with obsessiveness in the perfection of the acts that we perform. But we have Torah as well. Torah is something else. Torah is perfection of the model. And Torah is a different kind of relationship. Torah, we become totally involved in the perfection of the model. That there's a system that we reason with, that we understand, that we intellectualize, a mathematical sort of model that we construct called the Torah, that we understand, that we analyze, that we perceive, and that we try to apply. And there's a third leg in Torah as well. We've got our Torah and we've got our Avodah and we've got Gemilus Chasodim. Gemilus Chasodim is the intimacy of interpersonal relationships. We have that too. So whereas in Noah's Ark we had three different cultures, each one specializing in its own culture, we had one culture that was obsessive about technological, about objective perfection, that was Yefes, and we had one culture that was obsessive about perfection in the model, that was Shem, the Semites. And we had another culture that was obsessive about intimacy and perfection of relationships, that was Chom. The Jewish people have all three. And that's what's unique about the Jew. He's not one of the three. You can communicate ideas of Torah anywhere in the world. Gemilus Chasodim, anywhere in the world. But Avodah can only be in Eretz Yisrael. If it's real, if we're coming to that perfection of the object, that has to take place in Eretz Yisrael. That's where we're coming into that intimacy where there needs to be a relationship with Eretz Yisrael. And just to understand the image of Eretz Yisrael, what does it mean to have a stationary point? What you've got to look at is that there is a flow of Kedusha from the Ribbono Shel Olam into the world. But that flow, there's a point through which that flow takes place. There's a contact point. Like an electrical connection. The electricity comes from outside, from the main power supply, and it goes throughout the house. All these lights have got electricity in them, very nice. But there's one point at which the electricity comes into the building. There's one point at which the Kedusha comes into the world, and from there it flows out. And that point is Yerushalayim. There's actually a flow of Kedusha through Yerushalayim, and then it spreads out all over the world. And you've got to see it a little bit like a big wheel turning. And a big wheel turning, if you stand on the circumference of the wheel, you're moving at a certain rate. The wheel's turning, and as you come closer to the center of the wheel, you're moving at a slower and slower rate, until theoretically, I suppose there should be a point at the center of the wheel which is absolutely stationary, as absurd as that sounds, but there should be such a thing, a theoretical point which is stationary. That's Yerushalayim. Wherever else you are outside of Yerushalayim, you're in a state of movement. The world is moving, but it's moving around Yerushalayim. I'm not talking physically, although physically also the world is moving around its own axis, but the spiritual axis goes through Yerushalayim. That's the point around which the world is revolving. If we want a stationary point for Kedusha, there's only one point which is stationary, and that's the center point, and that's Yerushalayim. And so if we want to feel that avodah, that's a mokum shematzdik es yoshveho. There is so much kedusha coming through Yerushalayim as it pours to the rest of the world. And then it gets diluted, and then all sorts of things happen to it, and it gets distorted as it goes to all the different places in the world. But the one place where it's not yet distorted is the moment it hits Yerushalayim. That's pure kedusha as it comes down from the Ribono Shel Olam, before it's traveled any distance in this world. To be at that point where the kedusha hits the world, that's a mokum shematzdik es yoshveho. It's a place that actually infuses tzidkus, infuses righteousness and kedusha into those who live there. Tzedek Kolek has to try very, very hard to resist that. It's unnatural to be a person like he is in a place like Yerushalayim. He has to really work hard at trying to avoid the influence of Kedusha. But he manages it. He tries, he works, and he manages. But it's not easy. In any other place that he would live, he would find it much more easy. It's an incredible Mesiris Nefesh of the man to choose Yerushalayim to be the mayor, where it's really hard to withstand the effect of Kedusha. But he does, but there are not many people who withstand the effect of Kedusha there. Most people are moved by it. Most people are touched by it. They actually feel something there. They're capable of feeling something there. That's the special role and the special mission of the Jew. The Noachide principle is to be able to find a place for each culture to express its strength, for each culture to express its specialness, and to interweave those cultures together in a way that makes a harmonious ark that can survive the storms of the flood. In Lech Lecha we go further than that, and we find one unique culture, the culture of the Jewish people, that contains within it all the other cultures. It contains the Torah, it contains the Avodah, and it contains the Gemilus Chasodim. And that leads us to some kind of understanding of what a Jew is meant to be in the world. The Jew is the only culture capable of communicating with all three other cultures. As far as the other cultures are concerned, B'nai Shem can communicate with B'nai Shem, and B'nai Chom can communicate with B'nai Chom, and B'nai Yefes can communicate with B'nai Yefes. But they can't communicate with each other. They have to convert one another to their way of thinking before they can communicate. That's why conversion is such an issue. The Muslims want everybody to be Muslims. The Christians want everybody to be Christians. And the blacks want everybody to be white. But the B'nai Chom. And everybody wants to be the same, because only if everybody is the same can you communicate. Not so the Jews. We've never tried to missionarize as a precondition for communication. We can communicate with B'nai Chom, and we can communicate with B'nai Yefes, and we can communicate with B'nai Shem. We don't have a problem. We've lived very well in Arab countries. In Muslim countries, we've lived very well for many, many years. We've lived very well in Western countries, and we've lived well in Africa too. It's possible to communicate, but only the Jew can do that, to communicate with all of them. I think I mentioned to you that I'm designing a management program together with the Black Management Forum, and I said to them, why mind? Because they went overseas, they studied management programs all over the world, Switzerland, France, Germany, Japan, and they came and they chose mine, which wasn't even made yet, it was still in my head. And I said to them, why mine? So they said, because yours is Jewish. So I said, so what's that got to do with you? And they said, no, you people have learned how to remain Jews and yet interact successfully with every other culture. You've lived in the, exactly as I said, you've lived among Arabs, you've lived in the Far East, you've lived in America, you've lived in Europe, wherever you've gone, you've done well, you've interacted well, but you've stayed Jews. That's what we want you to teach us to do. I didn't have the heart to tell him that he can't. It's not possible. That's not possible. That is the unique gift of the Jewish people. Only we have within us that capacity, because we contain all three cultures, we have the capacity to interrelate and to communicate effectively with all three. The others have a difficulty there. But that then becomes the function of the Jew, to be that channel of communication. And one begins to see what the messianic area is going to be, one begins to see what the role of the Mashiach is going to be. That center point based in Yerushalayim, through which all cultures will be able to communicate, through which all cultures will find expression, remaining themselves, remaining true to themselves. But through HaMelech HaMashiach, through Am Yisrael, through the Beis HaMikdosh, through Yerushalayim, through Eretz Yisrael, they will be able to communicate not only with the Jewish people, but through the Jewish people they will be able to communicate one with the other. And that's the time when we will really be able to see the shame of the Ribono Shel Olam, when we will really be able to see the Ribono Shel Olam as echoed, uniting and united Ushamoy Echot.